Monday, January 4th, 2021. Happy New Year. The first Chris Raby show of 2021. And starting with a bang, Bernie Miklas going to be with me in just a moment. Of course, Bernie, you can find him every day at scoopswithdannymac.com, doing a great job writing for the website. And it'll be our first time to just kick it around. We'll talk some Cardinals. We'll talk big league offseason. We'll talk Blues and more. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, Scoops with Danny Mac. Don't forget to check out Bernie every day. Everything on the website at scoopswithdannymac.com. So excited to chat with Bernie, and I've got nothing else, so we'll get to it. Bernie Miklas from scoopswithdannymac.com right now on the Chris Raby Show. You know, I think Bernie Miklas, there is an argument to be made that to this point of the offseason, the most exciting hot stove acquisition, Bernie Miklas, acquired by scoopswithdannymac.com.
I think that says more about the hot stove league for poor Cardinals fans than me and Danny Mac teaming together. But I'm very happy to be part of the team and to be with you and everybody else that's chipping in. It just keeps getting bigger and better. And I, if you don't mind, I'm gonna put something into this that I don't know that I've actually said. Either said in a way that explains it or people understand it. Like the thing about Scoops with Danny Mac is that it's a local site, and it's hard to explain. I'm at a stage where it's like, I don't really need the whole prestige thing about, well, you know, you work for ESPN, you work for The Athletic, you work for, you know, name your national brand or whatever. Or even locally, the Post Dispatch. It's like I'm so over that. Not that I disrespect those places, not at all. In fact, quite the opposite. But my point being, this was like a great thing to do right now. I mean, because Dan's a dear friend of mine. I love the site. I think it's great, and I want to go local, 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 local. You know, I just think it's a beautiful fit, and it's something that I just have tremendous amount of enthusiasm for.
You know, really, since March, I think I've come to appreciate more and more the ability to communicate in different kinds of ways. And whether it's catching up with friends and family, or if it's you and me taping an episode of the podcast right now, or you interacting with your readers, like, things have certainly changed. There's a lot of uncertainty, not just in the world, but in the world of sports and the baseball, to be specific, offseason. But you know, we can still adapt, and we can still talk baseball. We can still do what we do, even if we're doing it in different ways.
Yeah, you're right, Chris. And I love the challenge. I know you do too. I know Dan does. We all love the challenge of, okay, there's no games. There have really, relatively speaking, have been very few games since the start of the 2020 calendar year. And we've had a lot of empty space to fill, because usually when you have a game, you know, when there are games, there's always a ton of things to talk about. There's secondary angles. There's angles shooting all over the place, many branches to every game, every topic. And I kind of like the idea of just coming up with stuff, good stuff, to fill that void that, as you mentioned, fans have. And you know, I'm proud to serve them. I know you feel the same way. I know everyone at Scoops feels the same way. If we can do something that just keeps that bridge intact, that bridge that'll cross us back over to when the games will resume and we'll have a sense of normalcy, I think that that's a valuable public service. No, not in the manner of law enforcement or first responders or the heroes that are working the hospitals now. You know, not at all, but in our own way, we're providing a service during what has been a very awful time. And I feel good about that.
All right, so let's talk about this offseason, Bernie. Of course, you can read Bernie at scoopswithdannymac.com. And on that note, big picture, as you know, you're waiting to get back in the mix as we are living through an unprecedented baseball season into an unprecedented baseball offseason. Like, not a ton has happened. No GM meetings, no winter meetings. Obviously, the free agent market is very, very different. The trade market is different. Fans are antsy. Fans understandably want something to happen. So what's it like for a Bernie Miklas to be writing and to be writing day to day within this very, very strange market? Do you feel some pressure based on maybe what's not happening? How do you approach that, Bernie?
I think the natural instinct, or at least the first instinct, is to kind of play matchmaker. You look at the Cardinals' needs and you put them on a list, and then you try to find people that are available that would fill that need. Here's the problem. That's a lot of fun, and it's a harmless exercise. I think everybody enjoys being, you know, a general manager, even if you're a writer, a broadcaster, a fan, whatever. We all love to play. That's one of the great things about baseball. Everybody's a general manager. And it's a very inclusive thing. I think it's a lot of fun. But I find my pragmatic side really challenged or perplexed by reality. By that, I mean, it's one thing to have a list of players that you know could help the Cardinals. And it's one thing to identify those needs, which we all know are needs. But then I sort of have to pause and say, well, wait a minute. Yeah, I could write a piece about how George Springer would be the perfect fit, or, you know, they should go make that trade for Nolan Arenado, or, you know, things like of that nature. They should go get Francisco Lindor. And it sounds good, but we all know it's not going to happen, because the Cardinals, it's not in their personality. It's not in their character. It's not in their philosophy, within their philosophy, to do those kind of things. So what do? Do you write columns that, you know, basically have, they're just not tethered to reality? They're fun, but I almost feel that they're manipulative, because then people start talking about it as if this is a legitimate option. When, and, you know, in reality, it's probably, if not 100% not going to happen, it's darn close to it. And all you got to do is just to see the way the Cardinals have been operating. So that's the challenge for me, to try to keep the hot stove league chatter alive, but to do it in a way that is kind of grounded in reality, ways that, you know, whatever you propose or pitch, it's something that actually could happen. It's not a dream. It's not a fantasy. It's a match that takes in the Cardinals' financial situation and their overall philosophy. That was a long-winded answer. Sorry.
No, it wasn't, because you can't just play like fantasy baseball, right? Like, you can't just throw stuff against the wall. But you're right. I think you need to begin, and the baseline needs to be reality and needs to be a pattern of past practice. So I think the fair question to examine and the fair place to start, and I'll ask you, is why are the Cardinals, in my opinion, really in the maybe fifth offseason in a row, if you go back to, I guess, after the 2016 year, which was the offseason they acquired Dexter Fowler, why, Bernie, are the Cardinals seemingly, from an offensive standpoint and from a standpoint of evaluating the club's weaknesses, in the exact same spot for maybe the fifth straight offseason?
They've just had an inability, obviously, to evaluate their young players, their outfielders specifically. I think there's been a loss of confidence at the top with John Mozeliak and Mike Gersh, maybe to an extent Bill DeWitt, who I think really is a baseball man with a long history in baseball stuff, not just business stuff. I mean, he knows, Bill DeWitt knows his, he knows the business, but he also knows the business of baseball and putting a roster together. He's in on every decision. But so many things have gone wrong in how they're picking and choosing from a pool of talent in the outfield. Things haven't fallen into place the way they thought or hoped. And I think the longer this goes, the more unsure they are. I do think this is connected to 2021, because as time goes on, It seems to me they're very determined, and I had a long conversation with Bill DeWitt about this. Seems to me they're quite determined to actually go with the young outfielders and resist this temptation to put a one-year guy in there somewhere, like someone they would sign as a free agent. They really want to see, hoping that there will be 150, 160 games or whatever, they really want to see what they have in these guys because they don't think they've been able to see enough before they make a decision. And Chris, and I want you to speak to this. This is the tough part for me because if you think about, if you put aside the emotion, and the emotion being like, look, you need help offensively. Go get somebody. You know, that's a very fair and on point opinion to have. But part of me also believes that the guys we're talking about, especially O'Neill, especially Lane Thomas, Dylan Carlson, it doesn't need to be said because he's hardly been in the majors, Justin Williams, even Harrison Bader, who has played a lot, but it's not like the guy's got, 10,000 major league plate appearances. The Cardinals actually do need to find out about these guys once and for all. So, I mean, I don't think it's an outrageous thing for them to feel that way, but they have to also realize that if they're wrong again, if their evaluations are off base again, then it leaves them where? I mean, where do they go from there? I mean, will they eventually have to go spend some money to get an established outfielder? Last time they tried that, it didn't go very well. I mean, Dexter Fowler's had his moments. It's not, I think everyone would agree, even those of us who like the move, that overall his experience in St. Louis' performance has been disappointing. You know, it hasn't lived up to reasonable expectations. So they kind of have a puzzle and they don't know what to do with the puzzle. They don't know how to put the pieces together. And that's still a challenge as we sit here today.
Yeah. And even like some of the external moves and not just the outfielders you mentioned, but the trade for Marcell Ozuna. I mean, and the signing of Miles Michaelis after the 2017 season, you get Goldschmidt, you get Andrew Miller. Like they have done things and made significant moves, Bernie, externally in both the trade market and in free agency, but they still are left with kind of the same pieces that were moving around the chessboard every single December and January and February. And I think you're right. I think it's totally fair to, especially with last year and what the club went through and the amount of time they missed and the doubleheaders and, just mustering up enough games to get into the postseason. You've written about that as well. That's to be commended, and I'm not going to overreact over, anyone's body of work in 2020, but there's kind of this double-edged sword, right? Because I think it's fair to acknowledge the success they've had, how well they've done, and what they've accomplished certainly over the last, 8 seasons since I've been in St. Louis and even going back before that. But if I did that, then fans will jump on me and call me a rights holder or whatever. And then the other way, if you just criticize and point out deficiencies, then people could say, well, look at the success they've had. I mean, it's kind of a double-edged sword, and, right. And I think there are arguments on both sides.
Well, I agree with everything you said, and it is sort of tough being an arbiter, if you will, of this kind of stuff, because I don't think it's fair, and I've been really outspoken on this, in my writing and also my broadcasting. I think it's really unfair to not recognize how successful they've been and how well their model has worked in a lot of ways. I mean, there's one blank spot, which we'll get to in a moment, but I understand frustration and I understand that the standards are very high, and in part because the support for the team in home attendance and TV ratings, those things are very high too. So I get that people want to see perhaps more aggressiveness, like more of an attempt to reach higher. But what I really, really think is just stupid, frankly, is that it's okay to be frustrated. It's okay to challenge the team. The thing that's ludicrous, though, is as you were challenging the team or perhaps complaining about their approach right now or the last couple of years, you somehow think that it also means that everything you've done since Bill DeWitt purchased the team should be dismissed or disregarded or not be taken into consideration. And I think that's crazy. I mean, I understand the emotions. I'm an emotional guy myself. I mean, I'm frequently getting into trouble for just like, you know, kind of losing my cool or whatever. I mean, I get it. I don't resent people for having strong feelings, even if they're negative or critical, but come on. I mean, this franchise has been remarkably successful. They've just hit a rut in their inability to evaluate offensive personnel. And that's what it comes down to. When it comes to pitching, there's nobody better. And I'm not talking about free agents. I'm talking about drafting, identifying, developing pitching. They always have a huge reservoir of pitching. They always find guys in the draft. They find guys that sort of slip through the cracks a little bit. They have an uncanny skill to find pitching. The opposite is true of position players. Now, look, they've plugged in some good guys, and that's the other thing. I don't want to sit here and act like they don't have any good position players. They do. But where is the star? Where is the high volume impact guy? Where is a collection of players? Look, I don't think you're going to be able to replicate 2004 with Pujols and Rolen and Edmonds, not to mention some others. But you have Goldschmidt, who's kind of a quiet star. I don't think that his peak is still here. He's on the other side of that, but he's still really good. But who in that lineup frightens any pitchers? Who in that lineup scares the other dugout where they have to have an extra 10 minutes in the meeting to talk about it? I mean, the answer, even though they have some good hitters, they don't. The fear factor simply isn't there. And for as well as this organization has done developing pitching, which, again, I don't know that they get enough credit for that from some of the fans, but as well as they've done in that area, they're continuing to just grapple with this idea of like, well, where do we find position players? Where do we find sluggers? You know, they draft late. They don't have a top five pick, and that works against them. But still, I think it's fair to say they could have done a better job by now in this area. And it continues to bewilder them, which is not only a negative in terms of their on-field performance and what they're capable of doing. It also hurts them because it just feeds this perception that they're too cheap to go spend money and go get that hitter or things of that nature, you know? And, you know, and I've said, you know, and I know, I mean, I'm sort of breaking in my vocal cords today because I've been quiet all morning writing and stuff. But that's the other thing. People say spend money. No, actually, they don't do a good job of that. That's one of their weak spots. It's all about personnel judgment. I don't care whether it's the draft. I don't care if it's the trades. I don't care if it's the international market. I don't care if it's free agency. It's all of those things fit in one box. They're all personnel decisions. And this is an area where the Cardinals have been very inconsistent. They've had too many misfires. It isn't spending, it's judging. And I don't know why, frankly, it frustrates the hell out of me. I don't know why people don't understand that. The people who automatically, this rote reaction, everything, spend money, DeWitt doesn't want to spend money, you spend money. What, spend money like the Fowler contract? Or what, spending money like the Carpenter extension? The things,
here you go, Brett Cecil.
Yeah, thank you. Or any number of relievers that they have.
Attaboy, Mike Leake.
Mike Leake's another one. I mean,
$80 million.
And it's like, but for so many in the fan base, the answer is spend. I would maintain, as you do, that's actually been one of their biggest problems. They don't spend well. So why do you want them to do it more? And the other thing, and you jump in. I got another thought on this, but I'm talking too much. Go ahead, man.
Keep going. I want to hear your next thought.
Well, the other thing about this is it's another thing that just kind of rankles me in general is that, okay, me and my wife are here. And let's say let's just say the washer and dryer implode and we got to get another washer and dryer, right? So if we're looking in a store shopping, we're in a marketplace and we see there's a really good set that's got good reviews and we know it'll perform well and we can get that for, say, you know, $400. Does that make us cheap because we don't buy basically the same thing for $1,200? Like, when did being cost efficient become like something that raises suspicions that you're a tightwad, you're a miser, you're not committed to your fans, you're not committed to winning? No, it's actually smart. If you can get the same value for $400 as you would $1,200, who in their right mind wouldn't take $400 purchase, right? But yet, when the Cardinals make these really good value moves where they don't, KK Kim being a good example.
KK or Michaelis.
Or Michaelis. Like, they, it's like, oh, big deal. You know, who cares? Geez, it only cost them.
Haven't heard of him.
Yeah, it only cost them $3 million. I mean, what, am I supposed to be impressed? Well, actually, yeah, you are. Because why would you want to, I'm gonna borrow from my friend Chris Rabe here. Well, why would you want to go spend $80 million on another Mike Leake when you can get a guy that's better, that's going to cost you, say, $10 to $12 million? Like, what? Why would you do that? Why isn't that not a good thing to understand that there's a lot of great stuff that comes with finding really good value players. I don't need to be impressed by stupid spending. You know, I just want to see better personnel judgment across the board.
I will not forget. I think literally the plane had just landed in Florida for spring training. So it was 3 or 4 years ago. And it was the day that the Cubs announced the Yu Darvish signing. And then the Cardinals, like 30 minutes later, put out the release that they had agreed to a deal with Bud Norris. And it was framed like instantly. Even John Heyman, I remember, tweeted something like, well, the Cardinals' response to Yu Darvish is a Bud Norris signing. Like, way to go. And A, that's not how that works. And that's what makes me so angry is that, like, with that move or with other moves, there was an assumption like, oh, man, the Cardinals saw the Cubs sign Yu Darvish. So they were like, let's do something. And they went out and got Bud Norris. That's not what happened. And then the other part of that, right. Bud Norris is the kind of signing, like you said, they've had a lot of success with, and he was awesome for them that year. So it's just, we need to be able to separate the two, and maybe that's what makes it sting a little bit more, that you've been so good at the drafting and developing. You've been so good at finding some valuable pieces that, you know, analytically you identify and you target and are able to provide you with a lot for, you know, an investment that is not a lot financially, just if you did hit on some of the major moves, because they do spend above their market size. You know, if they just had a league average offense over the last couple of years, who knows what they'd be able to do.
Oh, that's right. And I you know, there is middle ground here, and we live in a culture, you know, we live in a culture that there's no middle ground. You know, it's either all or nothing. It's either, you know, whether it's politics, somebody's taste in music, somebody's taste in film, whatever it might be. You know, if you like music that's different than the music I like, then somehow that makes you wrong, Chris, that you're wrong. You know, no, actually it's music that you like to listen to, which is your choice. But the point is like, we seem to be increasingly incapable of finding the middle ground. And in this case, you know what the middle ground is with the Cardinals? Here's what it is. Here's the middle ground. A, it's perfectly reasonable to be frustrated with the state of this offense and to criticize the team for doing little to fix it. It's totally fair and just to have lost some confidence in the front office inability to evaluate position players or to have so many mistakes, put it that way. All of that anger and frustration is 100% legitimate, but that doesn't mean that the Cardinals are taking their fans for granted. They don't want to win. They're just kind of wasting everyone's time. They're content just to win 85 games and that's it. They're not committed. I mean, the thing of it is, you can have a really good organization, and they've been a really good organization and a successful organization with a successful model for a long time. It needs to be updated. It needs to be tweaked. They probably should be more aggressive. and make perhaps not as methodical. At times, I think, you know, even though it doesn't always pay off, at times I think fans and me and maybe you would like to see them do something daring. And I don't even know that a Dexter Fowler's daring. I mean, it was for them. But, you know, go all in, you know, once a decade for a player like a Bryce Harper when he's available, or a Max Scherzer when he has sent through the back channel word that he wants to pitch for you and will take less money. I mean, go for it. But my thing is, like, the frustration and anger that's justified, to me, it doesn't justify dismissing the Cardinals as some organizations that's past its time and they don't care about winning and they're not committed to winning. And my answer to that all the time is like, yeah, they're not committed to winning. They don't care about winning, except all they've done pretty much is win. So, except for that, good point. And so, I don't, you know, but anyway, I'm kind of rambling about that. But I understand the frustration and people should express it. But yet the middle ground would be you still acknowledge and admire and respect what this organization, what this product has been for 25 years under Bill DeWitt. It's been an incredible run of success that few teams can match. In fact, in the National League since 2000, no one can match at least the number of postseason victories, the number of, I believe, regular season wins, but postseason game appearances, you know, National League pennants, I mean, on and on and on. There's still a lot of that quality there. It hasn't gone away. So I think, yeah, roar all you want, complain all you want about things that are legitimate areas of deficiency or areas that have underperformed. Holler about that. But also acknowledge that this is a good organization that's got a really good track record. And it's just that in the middle, it means, well, now it's time maybe to try something different, to tweak your model perhaps more than you're comfortable doing. Yeah, there is middle ground here. I took a long time to get to that. But now, welcome to Will Leach's world.
I know Will is excited to get your gang back together, yeah, as well, as a lot of people are. Hey, Bernie, and I won't keep you all the way until your afternoon show, I promise. But, you know, one of the things that Derek and I talked about last week when he joined me was what you just kind of mentioned, and maybe an opportunity for the Cardinals to find a soft spot in the market right now to improve. And with the assets that they have and with some of the position players that they have built up over the last couple of years in the system, with seeing how the price of talent acquisition in the trade market right now as teams are cash-strapped and uncertain about their financials moving forward, is it a plausible roadmap to say, what if you overspent right now, perhaps in terms of prospects? We've seen, you know, in the last year, Mookie Betts on the move, Snell, Darvish, Francisco Lindor could be on the move. Is there a soft spot in the trade market where the Cardinals could perhaps overspend in terms of some prospect capital and then say over the next couple of years, with hopefully revenue coming back from an industry standpoint, with, you know, fans getting back in the field, the new phase of Ballpark Village hasn't started churning yet for the organization, then you've got money coming off the books like Dexter Fowler and then Matt Carpenter, and maybe there's an opportunity to spend in personnel now, spend in prospects now, and then in a year or two, then maybe you try to go out and get a big free agent swing. Is that a fair roadmap, or is anything of a blockbuster, quote-unquote, nature in this offseason maybe too dubious for a team to seriously consider?
Well, I'll probably disappoint our listeners, but I tend to be cautious about that. And what I mean by that is this, like, for example, I don't think there's anything wrong with trading prospects. I would do it, and I would agree with the Cardinals if they did it. If you know, you can't say 100% certainty, because unless you can get a player to sign a contract extension as part of the trade. But if you're comfortable and you feel very, very confident that the player will want to re-sign with you, and I'm talking about Paul Goldschmidt, then there's some certainty there. I don't think a one-year rental, it just doesn't do it for me. It never has. And I know it's worked for some teams. I'm not saying that it's insane to do. I'm just saying my personal feeling on it is that And this is, again, welcome to my pragmatic side, which I visit often. But no, I wouldn't want to give up a treasure trove of prospects for 1 year, Francisco Lindor, you know, or next year, whoever the version of Francisco Lindor is. I'm talking about a trade, a guy entering his walk year. I don't like that. I mean, I don't think renting a guy for 1 year is and giving up a lot for that rental. That's the kind of thing that's not going to get you very far over a long period of time. And I am one of those people that actually would prefer the Cardinals be in the playoffs every year, or most years, three out of every four, than maybe to just go, just throw all caution to the wind and for that one shot at another World Series. But if you miss and the postseason still tends to be random, then you're damaged for the long term, or at least for a while. So I don't think that they're wired that way either. I think they made the Goldschmidt move because they thought that they really could get him signed, and they were correct. But I'd rather just see them spend money on free agency, frankly, you know, because if you got to give up a first with the equivalent of a first round draft pick, so what? If you're good at drafting, you're going to be able to overcome that. And they've done that in the past. I'm more of a go sign a free agent guy than I am trading prospects for a short-term gain.
Knowing the nature of the baseball postseason and once you get in, what can happen and what can happen with pitching, all of that considered, and also taking into consideration what a grind the Stanley Cup playoffs are, what is the better likelihood of happening next? What do you think happens next? Cardinals win another World Series or Blues a cup?
Oh, that's a great question. If pressed to the wall and you're strong enough to do it, I would say I would say win the Stanley Cup, because I just think, especially with getting Mike Hoffman, which just sort of fell in their laps. I mean, they worked it, don't get me wrong. But you're talking about a really elite offensive player that would be a major boost to a lot of teams and a lot of contending teams. And then they're adding him to this lineup where they already have, you know, more forwards than they know what to do with, and they're hopefully going to get Tarasenko back. But my point is, the Blues have so much depth, so much talent. They've got a coach who knows what he's doing behind the bench, obviously. There's some questions. All teams have them. But I think right now this is a team that, you know, I could absolutely see getting to the Stanley Cup final. And then you just – it's like everything else. May the best team win. But they're capable of that for sure. I don't think the Cardinals are, because I think you need to score runs. And anything can happen in a postseason, and I've learned that so many times in the early years of Tony La Russa. I mean, you get frustrated watching this. You're like, they're never going to win, blah, blah, blah. Postseason baseball is so random. And hockey is too, but when you don't bring firepower into the competition, it's just going to be so hard to expect your pitching staff to get you there. With the Blues, you have to rely on your goaltending, because to win a Stanley Cup, all teams need to have a stellar performance from their goaltender. But my point being, it's one thing to say, well, Binnington's got to play great. But we've seen that even in the year they won the Stanley Cup, he had some clunkers and they won it anyway, because the team had the character, the experience, the ability to bounce back and put a bad performance behind it. But they also had a lot of ways to beat you. They had four good lines. They had balance from top to bottom. So it didn't always have to be the goaltender. I mean, they had backup. They had other ways to win. With the Cardinals, it's pitching and it's defense, although that's taking a hit with Wong being let go, basically. But it's pitching, pitching, pitching. And if you can't score, you're asking your pitchers to be basically Bob Gibson every night. And that's just no way to win a championship, where I think the Blues just have more overall talent, more overall depth, and more ways to beat you.
At some point down the road, we'll get into a Blues deep dive. I didn't mean to neglect them as they're on the ice for the first time today.
That's
but
right.
Doug Armstrong, it's amazing. Not only the moves he pulls off, but he's social media proof. Like, nothing gets out, man. Like, everything is locked up pretty tight over there. And in a league, especially the NHL, where I know there are a lot of agents, like in all the major sports, that like to talk to reporters and whatnot. The dude just gets stuff done, man. Like, he gets it done under the radar, and then, like, his track record, speaking of track record, just unbelievable for the past few years.
No, it really is. I mean, since you go back to the start of the 2011-2012 season, and that's 9 seasons of hockey or 10 seasons of hockey now. You know, it's basically them in Pittsburgh, you know, 1 and 2 as far as points and wins and all that good stuff. And they just continue to turn out talent. They're very resourceful. And the Hoffman move's something that frankly, maybe you've given me an idea indirectly for a post at Danny Scoops with Danny Mac. You know, the Hoffman move by the Blues is really the kind of thing, I think, that frustrates us all, that the Cardinals are not taking advantage of a somewhat similar opportunity. Like you mentioned the term, you know, soft market, soft spots in the market. Like right now, I'd have to think there are some really terrific value signings that aren't going to cost you a hell of a lot of money, not in a grand scheme of things. Like a Mike Hoffman. I mean, Doug Armstrong recognized the market weakness. Too many teams were strapped in terms of the salary cap. The Blues had some wiggle room, especially with Alex Steen. And I think Doug Armstrong, frankly, probably knew more about Steen's condition than he let on publicly. I think he probably had a really good idea that this was going to be tough for Steen to overcome, the back problem. And he was planning and plotting and planning and scheming. And he waited and pounced with a really creative deal for Mike Hoffman. And I know the two situations aren't an exact match. I mean, but my point being is there's a ton of talent out there right now. And no, we're not saying go get George Springer, because they're not going to do that. But there are so many good buys on this market right now. Take advantage of it. You know, just break away from the pack. Take advantage of it. You know, what's the point of competing? I don't, like, what's the purpose of all this, right? You know, and Doug Armstrong is always – got something up his sleeve. Now, yeah, sometimes it's like, what do you mean he just got Justin Faulk? You know, and although I think Justin Faulk's going to be a really good player this year, I think he'll be much more comfortable in many ways. But the point is, Doug Armstrong always has the next move to make. And in some cases with the Alex Pietrangelo situation, I think he knew early on it was going to be really tough to sign him. He's having a problem with the agent, whatever. He had his chessboard out and he was making moves, you know, 3-4 steps in advance, envisioning the board as it was going to play out. I mean, he's really good that way. I think the Cardinals need to get better that way.
No, I agree. It'll be hopefully fun to continue to have both teams rocking at the same time, because
sure.
Oh man, is that great. That's something that'll be great to get back, hopefully sooner rather than later, when folks can actually get to the games. Bernie, I appreciate it, man. This is great. And this is the first time we've ever done anything professionally. It's the first time we've ever worked at places where we can work together, or that we've worked at the same place. So it's great, man. And I'm just so excited for what's to come and what's to come with you being a part of Scoops. This is a treat, man. I look forward to chatting and getting into hopefully some of the major league moves, and hopefully spring training here shortly, the Blues and everything. So really, really enjoyed it, man. This is a real
Chris, treat. I enjoyed it too. You have a lot of talent. I've been a fan, and I really like the fact that my opportunity at scoopswithdannymac.com has given me a chance to finally do some things with you, and we will continue to do some things together. And the next time I promise I won't be such a windbag and you can talk more. So.
No. I never want to talk more. But I'm aware of what the people want, Bernie. I'm aware of that. And you're giving it to them. ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. We'll talk soon. Be safe, man.
Thanks, brother. We'll turn the speakers up to their brain.